Blog Talk.
Welcome to the L.A. Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we've got news and views for you. And we're going to go...
A lot of views.
Yeah.
And some news.
I just lost that, so... Huh.
What did you lose?
Huh?
The news.
I just lost the news.
That he had already?
Yeah.
Okay. Just take us a minute to get set here.
Yeah.
So just be patient with us.
Yeah, so...
Let's see.
Got some really interesting stuff going on. This knocked me out when I read it.
Health authorities want depression-causing drugs added to the water supply. As if fluoride and hexavalent chromium in public water supplies aren't bad enough, health authorities are now pushing for the addition of drug statins as well. Drug companies claim that statins will lower cholesterol and prevent heart attacks and strokes. But researchers have proven that the drugs only benefit a quarter of the people taking them. There are some very troubling side effects, especially if there's no history of heart problems. Yeah, why do we want to take it?
Why do
we
want to dump this stuff? You know, it's unbelievable. I
don't want to take it.
Really
a new study of the Cochrane Library is highlighted in the following article. The review of statin trials found symptoms of short-term memory loss, depression, and mood swings. They were purposely minimized by the drug companies funding the research. Statins also have been linked to a greater risk of liver dysfunction, acute kidney failure, cataracts, and muscle damage. The pharmaceutical companies' powers are overflowing. We can actually see their influence trickling into Federal Health Administration, down into municipalities, and flushing into our water mains, in our water, local water treatment centers. Health authorities are pushing for drugs to be added to public water supplies that cause depression and memory loss, as a new study shows that the dangers of statins have been deliberately underplayed by drug companies. In a chilling throwback to how the population in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World were mass medicated with soma to keep them docile and easy to control. Statins are taken by tens of millions of people worldwide, a boon for drug companies like Merck, and whose chief executive, Henry Gadsden, back in 1975, dreamed of being able to sell a drug to people who had no immediate identifiable illness, or as Mike Adams writes, they needed a way to sell drugs to healthy people. Statins were born, and the financial windfall for Big Pharma quickly followed.
Drug companies claim that statins have been proven to lower cholesterol and help prevent heart disease and strokes, leading many health experts to insist that they be artificially added to public water supplies. But dangerous side effects buried by drug companies conducting statin trials have now come to light. In addition to the fact that for three-quarters of those taking them, they offer little or no value. The new study published in the Cochrane Library, which reviews drug trials, examines data for 14 drugs trials involving 34,000 patients and found evidence of short-term memory loss, depression, and mood swings, and had been deliberately underplayed by the drug companies. See, that now that they have to take fluoride out of the water,
they've got to
find another substitute. So now it's putting statins in the water and depressants.
The researchers warn that statins should only be prescribed to those with heart disease or who have suffered the condition in the past. Researchers warn that unless a patient is at high risk of suffering a heart attack or stroke, statins may cause more harm than good. However, despite the fact that statins have been linked to a greater risk of liver dysfunction, acute kidney failure, cataracts, and muscle damage, health authorities have been pushing for the drug to be added to the public water supplies as part of a mass medication program that is not only illegal without consent, but also threatens a plethora of unknown consequences.
Only last week, George Lundberg, MD, the editor of MedPage Today, which is a mouthpiece for the American Medical Association, wrote an op-ed entitled, Should We Put Statins in the Water Supply? And in May 2008, renowned cardiologist Professor Mahendra Varma called for statins to be artificially added to drinking water. But statins in the supply, in the water supply, are also considered during a November 8th discussion with Robert Bonow, MD, and a bunch of other knuckleheads. Okay, also, in November 8th, CNBC aired a segment lauding the effects of
2008.
In which one of the hosts remarked, why don't they just put the statins in the water? Yeah, must be some dead fuck. A lot of people have said that, and they are in the water, in fact. A lot of people have said that, and they are in the water, in fact.
The idea of adding drugs to the water supply to biochemically manipulate the thoughts and emotions of population has gone from the realm of science fiction in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, where people were medicated with soma to keep them docile and easy to control, to an imminent reality. Indeed, during a March 20, 1962, Berkeley University speech, Huxley spoke of how humans would be made to love their servitude via the state-sponsored introduction of mind-altering drugs.
There will be in the next generation or so, the pharmacological method of making people love their servitude and producing dictatorships without tears, so to speak, producing a kind of painless concentration camp for entire societies so that people will in fact have their liberties taken away from them, but will rather enjoy it because they will be distracted from any desire to rebel in propaganda or brainwashing enhanced by pharmacological methods. And this seems to be the final revolution, said Huxley.
In 2008 paper entitled Fluoride and the Future Population Level Cognitive Enhancement, Oxford professor Julian Savulescu explored how populations of the future could be mass medicated through pharmacological cognitive enhancements added to the water supply. In December 2009, we reported on how Japanese health authorities were considering adding trace amounts of lithium to public water supplies as a mood stabilizer in a bid to lower the suicide rate. Fox News medical expert Dr. Archel Georgiou gave the concept tacit approval when she labeled the study an interesting concept and refused to even mention that the moral aspects of mass drugging people against their will.
In 1977 book, Eco-Science, current White House science czar John P. Holdren also advocated adding sterilant drugs to the water supply in part of a program of involuntary fertility control. Of course, a huge number of Americans are already being mass medicated against their will, from which one of a myriad of debilitating health effects includes lowered IQ and increased docility. Indeed, as Joseph Borkin documented in his book, The Crime and Punishment of L.G. Farben, the first occurrence of artificially fluoridated drinking water on Earth was found in Germany, Nazi prison camps. The Nazis explained that the reason for mass medicating water with sodium fluoride was to sterilize women and coerce the victims of their concentration camps into a calm submission. So there you go, folks. They're trying to throw this crap in our water. They already have it in our water, and you wonder why Americans are so screwed up. Right? And that is why. That is why. Back to you. Let me just check here. Oh, damn it. Yeah, okay.
Go back.
Yeah, I will. I just want to check the switchboard. Just the switchboard here.
There's nothing on there, so.
Nope. I just have to always check.
Yeah, if people want to call in, they can.
Yeah. Let's see. It's more of a change doesn't say anything. They just confront him.
Oh, they confront Dick.
Yeah.
Oh, we are change in quotes confronts Dick Cheney.
Yeah, it was cool. It was Cheney's.
And Silvio Berlusconi, of course, will face trial. Good.
Yeah, that's good news. This is interesting. FBI memo seeks to confiscate firearms from people through bureaucratic red tape and fees. President Obama is following George Soros' advice ruling by decree if he cannot get his way with the new Congress. One of the issues is gun control. No anti-gun bill will never
make it out of committee with a Republican-dominated House of Representatives. He cannot outright call for a ban on the people possessing firearms and tell people to turn in their guns.
The Attorney General Eric Holder issued a memorandum to FBI directives to carry out mandates concerning gun control. These directives are designed to make it impossible for the average person to own a firearm because of the red tape and many fees gun owners will have to pay annually. If they cannot afford the fee, they will have to turn in their firearms if people comply with it.
So it's like a tax?
Yeah. Mark, this is from the survivalblog.com. Mark Korenke, who is part of the Michigan militia, received this FBI memo from a source inside the agency. It is apparent that this Obama administration is working hard to find ways to disarm the American people. I do not think the American people will buy it this time around. We have seen what happens when the people are disarmed. You look at when the communists took over China, Russia, and Cambodia, when the people were disarmed. These governments murdered people on an industrial scale. We have seen what happens with gun control in cities like Chicago and New York. They are the most authoritarian cities where corruption flourishes and crime rampant, where the outlaws have guns. And the reason is that rights to keep and bear arms among the law-abiding is illegal. So they will never be able to stand up to the corrupt governments and the criminal elements that run the city. Gun control laws punish the law-abiding, not the lawbreakers. What are in these directives? Here is a few.
Taxpayer-funded gun buyback programs. Instead of a 3-day waiting period for a background check, it turns into an indefinite waiting period. That means you will wait forever. Handgun licensing, gun safe licenses, restrictions on ammunition and magazine capacity, licenses on shotguns and rifles.
It is stated in the memo that they believe there is about 68 million gun owners in America. I believe there is much more. And they are hoping to reduce gun ownership to 14 million. Their stated goal in zero private gun ownership. This administration wants to disarm population. The difference between Americans and mass graves and locked up inside FEMA camps is gun ownership.
These directives they claim to derive their authority is from three actions. They are enforcing the UN Small Arms Treaty without being ratified by 2/3 of the Senate. They are using the Brady Bill, which was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, and the 1968 Gun Control Act, which was written word for word identical to Nazi Germany's law.
They are coming for our weapons we use. They are coming for our weapons we use to defend ourselves against criminals and tyrannical government. What laws this sitting president cannot get passed through Congress, he is implementing through the bureaucracies to carry it out by creating regulations. He is enforcing cap and trade to the EPA when there is no law passed. He will be trying to confiscate the guns through writing regulations and executive orders using the arms of the BATFE and the FBI to carry out the decree, like the EPA is being used to illegal enforce carbon credits.
This is the time we need to be stubborn and say no to any lawless attempt to illegally disarm us. Firearm ownership in the hands of the people is what stands between freedom and hell on earth. We have the law of the land on our side. We use it or we lose it. The Second Amendment of the Constitution says a well-regulated militia is necessary for the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. We either be a stubborn free man or be a slave at the mercy of tyrants. The choice is ours.
All right, and that, you can go to that at survivalblog.com.
A good article, not particularly well written, a lot of grammatical.
Yeah, but still, yeah, it's for what it is. It's for what it is.
And punctuation.
This is all over the place. I don't know.
Hannah Montana dad blames Satanism in family breakup.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just curious.
Okay, well, he's actually blaming...
When asked if he thinks his family is under attack by Satan, Billy Cyrus says no doubt. There is no doubt about it.
And they're driving to work each day in the City of Angels was this sign, a physical sign atop the highway, Atheists United. It could have easily said, you will now be attacked by Satan entering this industry. You are now on the highway to darkness. Billy Ray Cyrus said that.
If he only knew the extent of it and what would happen to his daughter, but too late. The Hannah Montana sensation has a backup story we've heard before. Father Billy Ray Cyrus, country singer, sacrificed his daughter to the Disney machine, and it's chewing up their lives. Nothing new about that. These days, Billy Ray Cyrus's life is imitating a bad country song. He set it for a messy divorce. His record company just delayed his latest comeback, and his cherished 18-year-old daughter seems destined to rip bong hits at every party in the U.S. Now, no wonder he's muttering about the end times.
Rendered powerless, Billy Ray apparently understands what happened and tells of his inability to get past Miley's handlers. He spoke to one of the handlers, asking what's going on. He was referring to YouTube. Showing Miley using the drug Salvia. They told me, he said, his contempt and despair, still naked and fresh, it was none of my business. He goes on later, anguishing over her apparent sequestration.
Sequestration.
Yes, thank
there's
you.
No such word. I feel
yeah,
like
I don't think so either.
I feel like somebody's sequestered, but there's no word.
Yeah, sequestration.
I feel like I got to try. It's my daughter, and some of these handlers are perhaps more interested in handling Miley's money than her safety and her career.
I'm scared for her. She's got a lot of people around her that are putting her in a great deal of danger. I know she's 18, but I still feel like, as her daddy, I'd like to try to help, take care of her just a little bit, or at least get her out of danger.
When he asked if he thinks his family is under attack by Satan, Billy Ray says, no doubt, there's no doubt about it. I'll tell you right now, that damn show, Hannah Montana, destroyed my family. I hate to say it, but yes, I wish the show never happened. For my family to be here and just everybody okay, safe, sound, happy, and normal would have been fantastic. I'd race it all in a second if I could. In fact, it is this late-in-the-game, hands-off attitude that Billy regrets the most. He claims he didn't profit from his daughter's success, except for his role as an actor. I should have been a better parent. I should have said enough is enough, but I didn't. How sad, but he knew better and admits it. The price of doing business in this industry is your soul and your mind.
Mind control victims, everyone. The interview then takes an eerie detour as Billy Ray tells his own tale of needing to get away from it all, prompted by the death of Kurt Cobain, with whom he was friends. He also mentions trying to help Michael Jackson and Anna Nicole Smith, who two definite MKUltra subjects. That's interesting.
Huh.
The TV series Hannah Montana stars Cyrus as a girl who lives a double life, a secret double life, an average schoolgirl by day, and a titular pretty in pink and occult purple pop star by night. The splitting of Miley is demonstrated by her alter name, Hannah, is the name backwards as forwards, reminiscent of the constant mirroring she sees in pop videos, and by their different hair colors, further dark, light, checkerboard, and symbolism. The fact that Miley Hannah
has often been seen sporting butterfly symbols on her clothes, accessories, and websites pretty much clinches it for one blogger. You can go there and find out.
So she is literally, in terms of her MK programming, MK Ultra programming, some form of corporate global Lolita robot being used to socially engineer teenage girls for their role as Illuminati sex slaves and breeding stock. Interesting. Cyrus interview is somewhat jolted and disjointed, and you get the sense he may be playing out his script role and personality for the interviewer. It's not dishonest sounding, but there is haunting sense that something is being staged. Is he also a subject? When that good old boy country stuff meets Hollywood, you don't have to guess who's going to come out on top. And that was from, HenryMacau.com, which is, he's a conspiracy guy. But nevertheless, there's been a lot of talk. I've read a number of things about Disney, actually Disney being a saint.
Well, look what happened to Britney Spears.
Yeah, they destroyed her.
She was a beautiful little girl, and then they just turned her into a slut.
And they did the same thing to Christina Aguilera.
Oh, she was beautiful,
yeah,
too.
And, you know,
I mean, why they couldn't just have good singing careers and dancing, but do they have to be so sexualized?
Yeah,
it was horrible
to,
what
yeah,
they did to those
yeah,
those two girls,
yeah.
I thought.
So, like,
and I hope they're free of it now, I hope.
I do, too. They're forever bruised.
They never recover from it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure Miley Cyrus will ever recover from it.
And they're part of the... And, you know, I read years ago how the Tavistock Institute in London was behind the Beatles, the Stones, all the big British invasion, where they actually wrote the music. A lot of the music was written by professional musicians and then given to these guys, and they learned to play it. But the thing was is that and LSD was initiated there and given to all the people,
musicians,
all the kids in the United States
yeah,
and everywhere. So this was this is part of the mind control. Which swept the nation in the 60s and 70s and 80s and up till now. Fed dictator Bernanke needs to be toppled.
Huh.
That's interesting. Fed boss Ben Bernanke is the most dangerous human on earth, far more dangerous than Hosni Mubarak.
Hosni.
Yeah, and Egypt's 30-year dictator. And Bernanke rules a monetary dictatorship that will trigger the coming third meltdown of the 21st century. Market Watch. That's where this is from. Paul B. Farrell.
I don't know him. Market Watch. Just as Mubarak was blind to the economic needs of the masses and democratic reforms, Bernanke is blind to the easy, money legacy that set the stage for revolution, turning the rich into super rich, while the middle class stagnates and peanuts trickle down to the poor. Warning, Egypt also had a huge wealth gap before its revolution. Bernanke is the final egomaniac in America's bubbling 30-year wealth gap, where the top 1% went from owning 9% of America's wealth to owning 23% during this dictatorship.
Bernanke's ruling ideology is a culmination of 30-year economic war that was forged together Reaganomics with a super rich former Fed chairman Alan Greenspan's toxic alliance to Wall Street. And the extreme Ayn Rand's capitalist dogma, culminating in the toxic bailouts of Treasury Secretaries Hank Paulson and Tim Geithner, two Wall Street Trojan horses corrupting government from within.
You got that right.
Since 1981, this monetary dictatorship has caused enormous collateral damage and systematically sabotaging democracy, capitalism, and the American dream while fueling the rise of our most dangerous new enemy, China. And when Obama reappointed Bernanke a couple years ago, Black Swan's Nicholas Taub was stunned. Bernanke doesn't even know that he doesn't understand how things work, that Bernanke's economic methods are so inadequate they are homeopath and alternative healers look empirical and scientific.
We called Bernanke the captain of the Titanic, warning that he was setting up the third meltdown of the 21st century, predicted by irrational exuberance Robert Shiller, a coming crash worse than the 2000.com crash and the subprime credit meltdown of 2008 combined. See, Captain Bernanke sinks the USS Titanic. Inside the Fed, Cassandra's Chicken Littles and Governor's Crying Wolf. Unfortunately, as with Egypt's dictator, the 30-year dictatorship now headed by Bernanke must end soon, and this class war will not be pretty, but it is no black swan. No one can claim they didn't see a new crash coming. For several years before the 2008 meltdown we reported on money managers, economists and financial gurus warned of a coming meltdown. They included two Fed governors who warned Greenspan in the early Bush years, and yet, as late as summer of 2008, Bernanke, Paulson, and Greenspan were systematically dismissing mounting evidence of mega crash dead ahead. That's why Time magazine's cover story about Thomas Honig, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, grabbed me. David von Driels, the man who said no to easy money, is a warning to all America.
Like Ed Gromelich and William Poole, the two Fed governors warned Greenspan during the Bush years, Honig regularly dissented from Bernanke's easy money policies that have been favored by Wall Street throughout this 30-year dictatorship. While paraphrasing Drayle's interview with Honig, as 10 warnings because it's brilliantly reveals the broadening historical tragedy of the Fed's 30-year monetary dictatorship driving America to the edge of another 1930s economic revolution, one that will be triggered by a repeat of the 1929 wake-up call.
Commodity price inflation will soon end the Fed dictatorship. Honig constantly cast his lonely ballot against the indefinite reign of easy money, 8 meanings, 8 no votes, an unyielding point of view, one that has become ever more relevant now that rising commodity prices have put inflation worries back on the economic radar screen. In short, global community inflation may soon do what Honig could not, put an end to America's self-destructive easy money reign of economic terror, and more importantly, finally end the Fed's 30-year monetary dictatorship. Well, this is a little bit of what Ellen was talking about.
Right.
They gamble
with
commodities. It's just gambling.
Bank, yeah, central bank dictatorship destroying America's democracy. I'm going to, this is long,
yeah.
So I'm just going to read the 10 points. Central bank dictatorship destroying America's democracy. Near zero rates. Banks richer, masses poorer, make a meltdown. By keeping interest rates near zero indefinitely, the Fed is asking savers to continue to subsidize borrowers, which in what incentive is there to save and invest? Early in his long career, Honig was heartsick as an irrational, exuberant Alan Greenspan kept piling so much money into the economic bonfire that led to the Great Recession in 2008. Now the time's come to start sobering up, except Wall Street's addicted to easy money and won't sober up. Easy money blowing new speculation bubble pops soon, right? Bernanke is a narcissistic illusion of monetary power. Easy money fueling worldwide inflation and a new meltdown. Fed policies favor the rich, sabotaging the American dream. Unfortunately, the Fed learned nothing from the 2008 crisis. Market economy a joke. Big money lobbyists run America. And America must end easy money. Add new Glass-Steagall. Yeah, I agree with that.
These are the headlines of each area that they're talking about.
Market economy. This one is just a joke. Big money lobbyists from America. Remember, folks, 20 years ago in the S&L bank crisis, 3,800 bankers were jailed. This time, Wall Street robbed us, got away with it, are still robbing us. Honig asks, where is the penalty for failure? We don't have a market economy. American capitalism is now crony capitalism. You know how big your political donation is. And that's the way that goes.
Yeah. Not one of those people went to jail for what they did.
No.
They got rewarded with huge bonuses.
Yeah, and you can blame Obama for that.
Uh-huh.
And you can blame Bush for that.
Oh, yeah, they're all part of the same thing. Do you have a little audio to play? Why don't you do that?
Yeah, I'm trying to find one here. It's just I wanted to go back to this one, too. I thought this was interesting. You wonder where Mubarak's $7 billion theft.
$70
billion. Yeah, well, it says here on here, but it's $70 billion. UK's profits from Mubarak's $70 billion theft from Egyptian people and refuses to freeze his assets. So this talks about how the British banks that have $70 billion aren't freezing his assets.
Following Tunisia's revolution, winds of change swept across Egypt and led to the fall of Hosni Mubarak. But here in the somewhat cooler climate of London, England, Egyptian democracy campaigners say it's still business as usual in terms of the UK's foreign policy. At a meeting across the street from Parliament, a gathering of Egyptian campaigners gave a clear warning to the British establishment that the era of Western-backed dictatorships in the region was coming to an end. The Egyptian democracy campaigners say they want to see a real change in the direction of British foreign policy, and they say the UK government can start by freezing the assets of the Mubarak family in Britain. The assets, say the campaigners, are the proceeds of corruption and must be repatriated to the Egyptian people.
If you think that a lot of our troubles have to do with us having to bow to foreign aid, which is, say, from the United States, is $1.2 billion a year, the rumors go that Mubarak alone, Mubarak's family, now are something between $5 and it goes up to $70 billion. I mean, that would cover us for 10 years and would give us back a sense of who we are. And I think it's money that is ours as a nation to build and do what we want.
Both the leadership in the UK and US have said they support a transition to democracy in Egypt. But on a wider scale, the activists say Britain and the US's decades-long support for a regime which oppressed its people has troubled many Egyptians.
We see them use very robust language with some nations, and with a bona fide dictator, we saw a half-hearted attempt to support or not support the Egyptian people. And that's very dangerous, because the strong message we had to say was things like terrorism, preventing terrorism in the UK and the US starts with your foreign policy towards an example like the Egyptian Revolution. You are breeding contempt and resentment into a whole new generation of Egyptian youth.
But despite their criticisms of the British government and Western media, the Egyptian campaigners say they are full of love for the British people, who voiced their clear support for the revolution in Egypt. Hassan Ghani, Press TV, London.
There you go. So that's kind of interesting, I thought. What do you think?
Yeah, it didn't really say much, though.
Well, they're not giving up their dough.
No.
That's all it needs to say. And I am going to go for a minute. I'm going to play. It's 8:30. I'm going to play a little music, and we'll be right back, okay?
All right.
Just a short break.
gather our voices, rest them a little bit.
Yeah.
And
get back to
our news. This was really upsetting.
Yeah.
Obama is cutting fuel assistance to the poor. You know, we had one day where it was 14 degrees below zero, and our heat went off here.
Our fuel line froze, and
let me tell you, it was pretty cold.
It got to like about 55 in the house, but that's damn cold when it's like minus 14 outside, you know.
And we were fortunate. I could call the person who takes care of my furnace. He came. He thawed the line. I had plenty of fuel oil, and the heat was back. But it was quite a few hours. Leo was home. I was at work.
So we could understand what the, if anybody's actually frozen in their homes.
I mean, you die.
Imagine what it's like freezing outdoors and not having a place to be warm. You know, be homeless or people without fuel. You know, or can't afford the damn fuel.
Are we going to have Venezuela? Will Hugo Chavez have to come up with some oil for our people?
He's the only one who has.
He stepped forward for fuel assistance for the poor. Is he the person that this government has vilified and demonized? Is he the one that's going to step forward rather than our own people, leaders?
The Obama administration acknowledges on Monday that this proposal to slash funding for heating assistance to the poor would, in fact, hurt the poor.
No kidding.
You
have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out.
Yeah, but then he says, this is a very hard cut. White House Budget Director Jacob Lew said during a press conference, this is a cut that has real impact. The White House proposed budget for fiscal year 2012 has funding for the low-income home and energy assistance program, reducing its allocation to $2.5 billion from just $5 billion, just over $5 billion. I mean, cutting that in half. It's like, good God, man.
So half the people won't have it.
Yeah. And let's see. It's a short article. It's just that you get this article from the Huffington Post today. LIHEAP, LIHEAP, doles out money to states, which then hand it over to local relief agencies, which review personal data, financial data, to ensure that applicants for the assistance really need it. Well, eligible applicants have the money credited to their accounts with the local utility company. Roughly 8.3 million people used the program last year. Its target population is the elderly and the disabled. The National Energy Assistance Directors Association, a group that represents state aid officials in Washington, estimated that the reduction would amount to 3.1 million households going without assistance or heating and cooling costs, not 3.5 million per...
Not 3.5 million per previous estimate.
Right.
I thought the administration would draw a circle around the social safety net for low-income families. I thought we were part of that safety net, NEDA Director Mark Wolf said. There are families who, without LIHEAP, would fall behind on their bills or cut back on basic essentials because they don't have any discretionary income. Nearly two dozen people who use the program told the Huffington Post in emails and phone interviews what LIHEAP had meant for them in recent years and what they thought of Obama's decision to sacrifice its funding to appease deficit hawks.
And not cut these damn military spending.
And how about,
I mean,
have that top 1% pay more then?
I mean, $2.5 billion, pays for one miserable plane, all right? You know, and...
One day's military funding.
Not even that. I mean, it pays for one plane by Lockheed Martin or something, you know what I mean? It's absolutely stupid. It's unbelievable. It's criminal that he would even consider cutting there. You know what I mean? To the least poor. And this was a bastard who was a community organizer, worked with the poor people in Chicago and all that shit. He didn't work with anybody. All he did was feather his nest there.
Get out.
He was given his job by another mass murdering bastard, Kissinger, all right, gave him the job, believe it or not. And so this guy was so connected all the way through. It worked this way for a couple of years, and then we'll
make you president.
Yeah, we'll have you run for state senate, and then run for Congress.
How about this? The U.S. Department of Agriculture deregulates GMO corn engineered to produce fuel, not food. Right on the heels of the USDA's decision to deregulate GM alfalfa, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has now decided to completely deregulate genetically engineered corn used for ethanol production. This is just the latest Frankenfood horror unleashed by the USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, who has firmly established himself as the regulatory puppet of Monsanto and other GMO giants. The public spin on this decision is that it will allow the growing of corn engineered to produce more ethanol fuel, thereby improving the efficiency in the conversion of corn to fuel. This claim, of course, scientifically invalid on so many levels that it's difficult to know where to begin, but I'll take a shot at it. See what they say.
This is by naturalnews.com.
Remember when we used to actually eat corn? For starters, in a world where food prices are rapidly rising, where crops are failing due to radical weather events, and where food stockpiles are the lowest levels in many decades, the idea of converting food to fuel is utterly ludicrous. Making matters even worse, the simple fact that ethanol advocates simply refuse to admit growing corn for fuel consumes more fuel than it produces, which is true.
The whole corn for ethanol debacle is simply another government-run agricultural cluster shuck involving the wasting of billions of taxpayer dollars, which disappear into the black hole of subsidies handed out to corn growers.
Which is really Monsanto.
Yeah, and the whole thing smacks of economic insanity combined with an almost alien view of the natural world. To look upon an acre of corn and think that it's supposed to be burned in combustion engines rather than consumed as nutrition represents a whole new level of mental illness, as illness which has infected the minds of regulators and lawmakers. Is there a vaccine shot to prevent it yet? Beyond that, the claim that this corn-to-fuel effort is now the justification of unleashing genetically contaminated GE corn across North America is not just bad thinking, it's dangerously bad thinking from people who should know better. The end of agricultural genetic integrity. Because you know that what happens next.
With GE corn being planted everywhere, the wind will cross-contaminate regular corn crops, resulting in widespread genetic pollution of the corn grown in America. This in turn will result in America's corn being refused for importation by other nations which don't want to poison their people with genetically altered corn, unlike the U.S. government. It will damage the entire U.S. corn industry, in other words, and further devastate U.S. farmers who are already squeezed by freak weather events.
The USDA's decision defies common sense, said Margaret Mellon, director of the Union of Concerned Scientists, Food and Environment Programs. There is no way to protect food corn crops from contamination by ethanol corn. Even with the most stringent precautions, the wind will blow and standards will slip. In this case, there are no required precautions. Over at the Center for Food Safety Science Policies analyst Bill Fries wrote, Syngenta's biofuel corn will eventually contaminate food-grade corn, and could well trigger substantial rejection of our corn export markets,
hurting farmers. An article at truthout.org reveals some of the possible under-the-table financial links that may be behind the decision to regulate GE corn.
To deregulate.
Let's take a look at that. Let's find out what the under-the-table financial links might be. We can go to truthout.org and see what it says there. If we can look through that quickly see who.
Legal regulatory battle, the agriculture secretary.
Monsanto, yeah. Let's see. Oh, this is a long article.
Yeah, it does. It's pretty long. I don't see the. It's.
Yeah. Well, let's just point this out. You can go to this article.
Yeah, go to truthout.org. Big win for biotech. USDA deregulates
Monsanto
alfalfa.
Anyway, the Alliance for Natural Health has also posted a very good summary on this situation. It's a great read. We could read that.
Our
corn supply is being stalked by Monsanto. So what does it all mean? It means that between GE.com, GE corn, and GE sugar beets, GE alfalfa, cotton, soy, and other ingredients, we're living in a grand, dangerous experiment of playing God with seeds. I've said this before, it's almost as if people like Tom Vilsack and other Monsanto minions are just begging Mother Nature to wipe out human civilization and start over. Here, everybody, let's turn our food crops into pesticide absorbers and feed them to cows and people. It's all being done for corporate profits, of course, because that's all it takes to compromise the future of our life on the planet. Just another buck on the bottom line. That's all it takes at the USDA, too. Just another promise of a sweet, cushy job in the corn industry after you've left the agency. Bend enough rules in favor of Big Ag, and you can name your salary a few years down the road. Because if there's a kernel of truth to be found in any of this, it's that corporations and regulators will operate with outrageous disregard for the integrity of the natural world. By the way, this decision was made under the guise of science. All the lies now being repeated about the safety of genetically engineered crops are being bolstered by the laughable claim that they are scientific and that anybody who opposes GMOs is by default unscientific.
You can read more about it in his article, Unscientific. I highly suggest you. Yeah, this is a very, very good website, and it's called naturalnews.com.
It's a wonderful website.
Highly,
they have great things on it.
Highly would recommend it. And please go to that and see the many other articles they have. Stop there. Okay. To reduce...
This is in Rhode Island.
Yeah. To reduce superbug infections, hospitals begin bathing patients in chemicals. A new study from Rhode Island Hospital has found a reduced risk of hospital-acquired infections when using 2% chlorhexidine gluconate cloths for daily bathing instead of soap and water. The study found a 64% decrease in the risk of acquiring an infection from either a methicillin-resistant staph infection.
Yeah.
Or
MRSA.
VRA, vancomycin-resistant enterococcus.
Vera.
Yeah. The study is published online in advance of print in the journal Infection Control. So that's happening in Rhode Island. And let's go on and see. There's another thing I wanted to show you. This is really interesting, but I don't know if I want to continue that. There was one I really liked, this one here.
Where poison were sick?
Yeah, this is about the Gulf oil thing again.
Those poor people. Residents who live along the Gulf of Mexico, all the way from Terrebonne Parish, Louisiana, to well into western Florida, continue to tell me of acute symptoms they attribute to the ongoing exposure to toxic chemicals being released from BP's crude oil and the toxic Corexit dispersants used to sink it. Shirley Tillman from Pass Christian, Mississippi, and former BP Vessels of Opportunity oil cleanup worker wrote me recently, "You can't even go to the store without seeing sick people. You can hear them talking to people, and they think they have the flu or a virus. I saw a girl that works at a local store yesterday that had to leave work because she said she was so sick. Others throughout the entire store were hacking and coughing. It's crazy that this has been allowed to happen to us at all."
And
right here. Obama, oil continues to wash ashore. That which was already there, usually in the form of tar balls or mats of tar, is being uncovered by the weather. Four of the fragile barrier islands of Mississippi have had 4 million pounds of oil removed thus far. The embattled coastline never gets a break. However, BP cleanup crews, who returned to work the first week of January after an 11-day break, removed another 11 pounds of oil from 11,000 pounds of oil from Petite Bois Island Thursday, January 6th, and another 3,800 pounds from Horn Island.
A northerly wind seems to do the uncovering of the oil, a cleanup supervisor said. Southerly winds appear to be covering it up. This is the biggest cover-up in the history of America, Plaquemines Parish President Billy Nungesser told reporters on a boat trip he took with Coast Guard and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration officials last week. Nungesser was engaged by finding vast areas of Louisiana marsh soil with oil, while no protective boom or cleanup workers were even within sight. It's like you're in bed with BP, Nungesser fumed at the officials. You cover up for BP. As BP's stock prices continue to improve, the Coast Guard, NOAA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the Environmental Protection Agency all continue to go to great lengths to convince the public, particularly those living along the coast, that the air, water, and food are perfectly safe. Doesn't that sound familiar?
Yeah.
That's what they did in New York after 9/11.
Yeah, go ahead, and then, you know.
Dennis Rednauer from Long Beach, Mississippi, has been suffering symptoms of toxic chemical exposure for months. I have pain in my stomach, stabbing pains, in isolated areas, she told me. Now I have a bruising rash all around my stomach. I've had shingles before, and that was like a rash, but this looks like bleeding under the skin. The sharp stabbing pain is all over my abdomen where this discoloration is. It's in my armpits and around my breasts. I have this dry, hacking cough. My sinuses are swelling up, not snotty nose or congestion, but the inside of my nose is swelling to where it's almost closed. I also have an insatiable thirst. That has been going on almost constantly for about 2 months. It's never gone away entirely. Sometimes I feel a little better, but it's always with me.
She recently had her blood tested for chemicals that are present in BP's crude oil and dispersants. Her blood tested positive. I tested very high for most of the chemicals, she told me on January 9th. I'm still having my symptoms and not feeling better. I'm feeling worse, in fact. The chemicals in her blood include benzene, ethylbenzene, hexene 2 and 3, methyl pentane, MP-exylene. Exylene benzene is a form of benzene present in the body when it begins to break down. It's also present in BP's crude oil. MP-exylene is a clear, colorless, flammable liquid that is refined from crude oil and used as a solvent. Ethylbenzene, MP-exylene, and hexane correlate to the volatile organic chemicals in the BP crude oil. Independent blood testing by environmental groups and independent scientists along the Gulf are they finding exceedingly high concentrations of these chemicals in people's veins. People who live near the coast, former BP cleanup workers, and even one man who lives 100 miles from the coast, everyone is testing positive with BP's toxic chemicals in their bloodstream. Oh, these poor people.
I know. The forces against independent journalism growing. That's true, though. Many of the chemicals present in the oil and dispersants are known to cause headache, nausea, vomiting, kidney damage, altered renal functions, irritation of the digestive tract, lung damage, burning pain in the nose and throat, coughing, pulmonary edema, cancer, lack of muscle coordination, dizziness, confusion, irritation of the skin, eyes, nose, and throat, difficulty breathing, delayed reaction time, memory difficulties, stomach discomfort, liver and kidney damages, unconscious tiredness, unconsciousness, tiredness, lethargy, irritation of the upper respiratory tract, and hematological disorders. Man, oh man. We're poisoned. We're sick, Denise added. furiously, "We've got lost our livelihoods. We have nothing to look forward to. We're destitute and depressed. I think everybody is walking around this with post-traumatic stress disorder, and the devastation continues in the Gulf. Yesterday I was at a beach and the chemical smell could knock you over. There was oil sheen everywhere, tar balls, crews walking the beach picking up buckets full of them."
Wow.
Yeah, this is it's not that long, much longer. George Parker, a commercial fisherman in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, wrote, "Dar, I wish to express our thanks for you to keeping up this in the public eye since the alleged end of Deepwater Horizon fiasco." He said, George and I they inspired him to write the following. The ecology.
This is in conclusion. While the ecology, biology, and the humanity that call the area of the Gulf of Mexico their home continue to suffer and die, the administrator of BP, $20 billion compensation fund, Kenneth Feinberg, said on December 31st that he anticipates half that amount will be sufficient to cover claims for economic losses. Feinberg is being paid by BP to administer that fund.
Yeah, he's being paid $850,000 a month. And that fund was reduced from $40 billion to $20 billion. So I don't know. This is a Truth Out is the website. Yeah, interesting statement. Jim Hightower says, "Truth still matters in America, but only if it gets out. That's the essential value of Truth Out, which puts the voice of regular grassroots people in our public policy debates." That's good.
Uh-huh.
Support Truth Out. Is there anything else? There was one other one I thought
we're coming right to the end here.
I think we're done.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got about 2 minutes. But I wanted to just mention, tomorrow night, we got a special show for you. I've got author David Ross, who's also the publisher of Open Books Media, Open Books Publishers, rather, and Escape Media. He wrote a book called The Virtual Life of Fizzy Oceans.
Uh-huh.
Right? And you know, it's a trip into a fourth dimensional, actually into a virtual reality. He covers a lot of ground, a lot of issues in that book, contemporary issues, climate problems, and so on. But it's kind of an escape into a fourth dimensional reality, and he brings up the Hopis, and he brings up the Mayans, and he brings up the 2012, and so on. So
you're going to talk with him tomorrow about that?
Well, tomorrow night we're going to talk to him. I've devoted the whole show to talk with him tomorrow night, and he'll be calling in from Greece, is where he lives.
That's exciting.
Look forward to talking, listening to our show tomorrow night, Thursday night on the 17th, when we talk to David Ross.
And that'll be on same time, but from 8 to 9 o'clock.
8 to 9 o'clock, yeah. So that's it. And
we thank you very much. Thank you very much for being with us
today.
And I hope you join us tomorrow. And definitely join us Friday. We'll have George Dixon on Friday.
Yep.
Everything going as planned.
I've got 1 second remaining. So good night, folks.
And take care.
And take care.